Jazz Crusaders with Agua Dulce, meaning sweet water. It's from their 1965 album, Chile con Sol. It's one of my favorite albums because it's got people like Wayne Henderson on trombone, Hubert Laws on flute, Claire Fisher on organ, Styx Hooper on drums, Wilton Felder on tenor sax, and Joe Sample on piano, and Al McKibben on bass, and Carlos Vidal on congas. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're talking today about your politics, your political situation. How is it changing, if it has, and from what to what? It will soon be exactly 6 months since President Trump has taken the helm of state. And, it's been a ride, needless to say. And it continues to be quite a ride. I don't know what you think. I could take a guess, but I'd rather you say what you think about the first 6 months of the Trump administration. But there's a reason for it, because I think we have to constantly ask ourselves, you know, how is my political attitude shaping up based on what we've experienced and what we continue to experience? What is it that I believe? What is it that is important to me on a political level, speaking of politics in the big sense, in the big picture sense? What should happen? What do you want to happen in this country? What are you prepared to do about your own political views and mindset? Do you think your views and mindset now are where you should have been some months ago? Or did it take you some time to get to this point, whatever that point is? And what are we supposed to be thinking about in terms, in a larger picture, in terms of change? Needless to say, it's not just about Trump. Although, of course, it's largely about Trump. But we also have neglected to bring to task those entities that at least presented themselves for a while as valid alternatives. We can't let them off the hook. Where are they going? What are they doing? Where do they see the political, the whole political spectrum? Where is it going? You get a sense that everything is out of whack. People are talking because they have to. You're looking for plans and concrete answers, and there aren't any. And life is just going on a day-by-day basis. We try to see whether we can survive the day and live to tell another tale. But that's not good, is it? Considering that we have midterm elections coming up next year, and we have presidential elections coming up in 2020, based on where we have been for the 2016 elections, and based on where we are now, what does the picture look like to you? I think we have to start asking questions about these efforts of late to kind of form something. I'm not sure what it is going to be or what it is at all, if it's going to be. But we should start asking some kinds of questions, or we should feel comfortable in that we're reading the landscape correctly and that we are preparing ourselves to occupy some kind of space on that landscape. But doing what? For what purpose would that be? Or there's another possibility. Maybe we should just sit everything out for a while until we can see our way to a clear vision of what it is we're supposed to be doing and how we are supposed to be doing that, to what end. But right now, I think it is safe to say that we're still reeling from the political outcomes of 2016. And it has been so devastating, we haven't really gotten a grip yet of how extensive it was and what we need to do. Can we recuperate in time? Do we recuperate at all? These are all questions on the table. And we, at some point, will have to deal with them. Because whether we move or not, other parts are moving. And they're not the kinds of parts that should move, because we know that should they occupy space in the way that Trump occupied space, we have another big problem on our hands. We see already, as the landscape is shaping up, we have people who are kind of soft-shoeing it, wanting us to guess that they're running or are interested in running, but they're not saying it. You know, it's very disappointing. We have a fractured Democratic Party, and I'm not so sorry about that, because I think the Democratic Party has fractured itself, and we shouldn't be running to fix it. I think it made a decision to leave the people. And so I think it's correct and right that the people should decide to leave it. Leave it alone. If it survives, it survives. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least we should be clear about what the party has become. And we should be clear also as to why it has become what it has become. The Republican Party has its own worries and its own troubles with credibility and inclusiveness and all the other things that they say they're about, but it's not showing up to be that way. It's a very, very sad political scene, I think. But I'd like to hear from you about what you are thinking. Now, we're just crossing, soon to cross the midway point in the first year. Based on what you have observed, based on what we've discussed, where do you think this is all leading? And for yourself personally, what does this tell you that you ought to do, if anything? We're just feeling things out. We're not pretending to have the answers. But certainly, I think we could say we are okay with having the questions. At least, that is good. And we should be talking about it because we have to live with it. We have to live with it. Whether Trump remains in office or does not remain in office does not in any way cancel our duty. We have Bernie Sanders and that crazy thing still happening. Is he fish or is he fowl? What is the deal there with Bernie? Are people still expected to have some kind of attachment to him? Does he have any attachment to anybody or any party as you see it? Is the political landscape changing and changing in a way that gives you reason to be reasonably hopeful? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But I do know that it's a really rotten time. Everything seems to be out of whack, out of place. Nobody seems to have cogent plans. The president started out, you know, winging it, and he still is. And it is not that kind of world. And certainly at his level, winging it is not a good idea. But where do we go? Have you given some thought about that? As you observe what has been going on for the past 6 months, are you comfortable with where things are? Do you feel that you have things in hand, and despite all of the hubbub, that you can deal with this and come out okay on the other side? So let's get into the conversation at 888-874-4888. We're looking here to get a sense from you about where you think things stand and where you think you stand right now. Gwen from Harlem, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice. How are you today?
Hello.
Nice and hot, right? Honey, you got to be baking down there.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
It is so gummy. It is so humid.
Isn't it nice? I'm going to give you some fresh news right off of the cement in New York City, okay? Because Aunt Gwen has been out here pounding the pavement for the last 3 weeks, trying to run for city council or running for city council. And I wanted to give you a temperature check of what the people are saying. The people on both sides are so unbelievably angry that it's almost detrimental to your health to be out there doing anything. Everyone is filled with hate that I spoke to. And I'm running, my district has changed, so I was gerrymandered out of my district and put on the Upper East Side. And so this is like supposed to be a working class district on the Upper East Side, spattered with some, you know, rich people. And the Republicans, although they've gotten everything they wanted, were so rude to me that I couldn't believe it. And one Democrat, when I asked him, we were asking people to sign our petition, one Democrat said to me, I'm not going to sign your petition because I think we should just blow everything up and have a revolution. I said, okay. And he's not willing to sign petitions or get involved with any kind of local politics. And the Republicans would almost be like, when they said, I'm not a Democrat, they'd almost be spitting in your face as they were doing it. And then I had a guy went by in a wheelchair, and he said, I voted for Trump. I said, well, how's that working for you? I guess you don't need medical care, huh? He said, don't you worry, lady. I'm going to make it. So there is what I see right now is total anger on both sides. And like I said, I don't really know why the people that voted for Trump are mad because they got what they wanted. But there was also Republicans that were telling me they were actually apologizing for voting Republican because they realized they put Trump in. And as far as the Bernie Sanders people are concerned, this is kind of interesting to me. I worked on the Bernie Sanders campaign last year until May when my husband died. And this time they contacted me in a group called Our Revolution, and they're putting out the word to have people run for county committees. So I went ahead and I got, you know, that one done too. I did, that was only 25 signatures. So as far as the Bernie people are concerned, my understanding is what they want to do is they want to control the Democratic Party through a group called Our Revolution. But I think what was really scary for me on both sides is this palpable anger, and also many, many Democrats that were prejudiced and basically not coming out and saying it, of course, but like really like it seems like the doors are closed on all sides, no matter what party you're in. And most of what I heard from people is this palpable anger and this other response of, well, I'm not going to vote because I want to get back at you. So I'm not going to vote. And I think that is always a bad thing, especially when you're talking about local elections, because local elections, you really do have a choice when you're talking about the primaries. They're usually better candidates in the primary. There's more of a selection there. And if you miss the primary, then you really miss everything. Oh, and the last thing I want to say is that there is a huge number of independents, many, many people that can't vote in any primary because they're independent and not understanding what you lose when you go in an independent party. And the other thing I wanted to say is I was very surprised at the change in demographics of the Democratic Party. Our mayor really did something stupid when he upzoned all five districts. And that is, he basically has lost a lot of Democratic ground, the Democratic Party ground here in New York, because he has allowed builders to be tearing down blocks at a time all over Manhattan in the five boroughs, whole blocks at a time. And then they build these towers, of course, luxury towers. But who do you think lives in those luxury towers? Well, the mayor has facilitated this huge Republican insurge because he took away the housing of people that were middle income, low income, and just working people. So now you can actually see, I would tell you that 7 out of 10 people I stopped on the Upper East Side were Republicans, not Democrats. And I was really surprised at that because that didn't used to be that way. So I learned a lot while I was out on the street, and also a huge amount of, you know, homelessness. There's a 50% upsurge in homelessness in New York, which, of course, I already knew about. And I guess one last thing I'll leave you with is that Trump, you probably know this, made his personal wedding planner the head of NYCHA. That was a wonderful idea. And, of course, with Ben Carlson, Trump has been up many, many times in Harlem and East Harlem trying to buy the land of the New York City housing projects. So he's thrilled that he's going to be able to push through this thing called infill, which is something I've been fighting for the last 10 years. Infill is where they build luxury housing on the land surrounding the New York City housing projects in order to, you know, basically push out the people who live there and get all of the buildings. So there's a temperature check for you today in New York City where it's 85 degrees.
So based on what you have discovered as a sole agent, right? You're doing your own thing politically.
Yeah.
You mentioned that it was such an eye-opener to you that all of this is happening and you didn't see it until you hit the streets. And actually, you know, so now that you have, what are you inclined to do about your politics?
Well, I think, first of all, with my politics, what I want to make clear is that, you know, I got a lot of anger for being a Democrat, people being angry at me. And people need to understand it, that there are two parties, basically, in New York, and that's it. And you don't really have a choice. It would be great to go out and say I'm running as a socialist or I'm running on the green. But you have zero chance of getting in unless you pick one of the two parties. And so I have to be identified with the Democratic Party, who I don't feel that I identify with. I'm a person that feels that the Democratic Party has left me behind as well. But that doesn't mitigate the fact that there are some really good candidates out there. And they, you know, they're good. These are good people with good representation. And so I will keep pushing forward, and I'll continue this run. At least as of today, we've made it onto the ballot, but we don't know if we're going to be challenged yet. That's one. And two, I know I'm getting into this race very late. I really didn't know. I felt very apprehensive because with the death of my husband just happening, you know, a little over a year ago, I didn't know that I had the fortitude to do this again. And yet I told Pete before he died that I would go ahead and we would do this again. So I got in quite late, and we're not going to get matching funds. But I will tell you something, Eutrice. I am glad I was out here because I learned so much. And I do want to tell you that where I live is East Harlem. So my reality is much different up here than it is on the Upper East Side. There's a lot more poverty up here, but there's also a lot more humility. There's a lot more generosity, I think, with the people who live here. People are just nicer. You know, they don't have so much money. It seems that people are just very nice. Yeah, they're a little bit more down to earth. But not to say that I didn't meet some nice people on the Upper East Side, too. So for me personally, I went ahead and I hope that I make it onto the county committee because I think we need a much, much, much more progressive voice in the Democratic Party here. And that is what I'm going to bring to that for sure. I'm going to just bring my bullhorn to that. And if I happen to make it, you know, as city council here, I can't wait because I think that the Democratic leadership of the city council and the mayor of New York has let me down and let many, many people down. They act like Republicans. They did exactly the same thing as the Republicans did. The mayor made Melissa Mark Viverito his little lapdog, just like Mayor Bloomberg took Christine Quinn and made her his lapdog. Both of these mayors decided to not obey the law and not get and they got involved in a city council speakership, which they by law are not allowed to do. So they both did the same thing there, and they both have been hyperactive with this overdevelopment. And what we see is hunks of New York being, just totally demolished. And it's not just taking out the buildings, it's taking out all the stores too. And it's like one block at a time now. It wasn't enough just to take down a brownstone. They're taking down churches. They're taking down whole blocks at a time with three or four buildings on them. And so, you know, this is, to me, a recipe for failure. And by the way, for everybody else who doesn't live in New York, I got news for you. This is all coming to a town near you, too. We are the testing ground in New York. But if we have, you know, a $5,000 rent here, eventually you're going to get a $5,000 rent in your neighborhood, too, because I saw that when our prices went through the roof, so did New Jersey, Pennsylvania. I mean, people are working 2-3 jobs in those places because they can't keep up with the rents. So I feel that I'll continue to be active. But I'm very happy that I put myself out in the streets. I had a better understanding of not just my neighborhood, my district. Sometimes it's really good to get out there and go to other neighborhoods and kind of take a temperature check. Listen to what people have to tell you. The other trick that landlords are doing here in New York is it was a trick they used in the projects of turning off the gas for months at a time. And so I was successful at getting the gas turned back on Lexington House projects after it had been out for 2 months. But this is now the rent-stabilized buildings are going into and doing this. And they're doing this because it is perfectly legal to harass tenants in New York City now. Christine Quinn and Melissa Mark DiVerito put a law together that said it's called anti-harassment. It's called that, but it's not. The only way you can sue a landlord for harassment in New York City is if an officer from the court is standing there witnessing it with you. If not, you cannot complain. And that's why landlords are going whole hog here, turning off gas, turning off utilities, and just basically, I guess the next thing they really have their eye on is getting rid of, you know, every single rent-stabilized apartment that there is. So,
that's been in the works for quite some time now.
Yeah, but you know, they couldn't facilitate it as easily if Christine mm-hmm. Quinn and Melissa Mark DiVerito had not made that new law that so many tenants don't understand. And even people, I'm surprised at WBAI, housing activists, went ahead and went along with it and said it was a good thing, knowing that it was a bad thing.
Where we're going today, and this is why I'm asking the question, because it still is the case that the Democratic Party is misbehaving as a party. It is still betraying the trust of people, even though, it should occur to them, especially since that disastrous performance in the election, they need to really reexamine where they're going. What is it that they see as the plan for the party? And why are they continuing to behave this way without examining their past behavior and deliberately passing up an opportunity to say, look, if we work really hard enough, perhaps we can win back some kind of support, genuine support from the grassroots and our people. But they don't seem to be interested in doing that either. But I'm glad that you've made a start, and you should keep us posted on how it's going.
Thanks, Patrice.
Thanks, Stay Gwen, cool. for calling today.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Michael from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice, and welcome to the PRN audience.
Thank you.
You know, sometimes I spend time on the...
We're getting an echo.
I'm sorry.
Let
me get
feedback on your phone.
Is that better?
Not
Is that better?
Quite. Yeah, that's better.
Okay. You know, sometimes I'm on the treadmill.
You
and
do it again. But we'll stick through it. Go ahead.
All right. Sometimes I'm on the treadmill. I'm watching the television that's attached to it, and I see movies, et cetera. And every time I see The Godfather come on, I'm like fixated. It's got so many truths in it, that movie. I was watching it the other day, and some of the quotes were like just stuck in my mind. When he leaves Italy, comes back, and he wants to get together back together with his old girlfriend, Diane Keaton Kay. He says, he tells her he's joining the father's business, and he wanted to be a politician. His father wanted to be a politician. And they're all disappointed. She's disappointed that he's joining the father's business. And he tells her, you know, my father's life is like any other powerful man. And he says, Diana Keyes says, but that's so naive. Powerful politicians, for example, don't kill people. And he says, who's being naive now, Kate? And the other quote I love is when Marlon Brando tells Michael, the person who comes to arrange a meeting, he's the traitor. That's interesting. Yeah.
The person who asks to set up the meeting, he's the one who will betray you. And it turned out to be right. But let me ask you, at 6 months since this new administration has taken the helm of state, what do you think now at this point?
Well, it hasn't changed my thinking. I think politicians are crooks, basically, for the most part. I think they're corrupt people who are corrupted by power. And I think that they go into the profession of politics because they're attracted to power, position, and authority. And you know how I feel. I think it's evil. So I believe that they're crooks. A young man came to my door in my town, and he's running for office, and he wanted to introduce himself. He wants my vote, of course. I said, are you a Republican or are you a Democrat? He says, I'm a Republican. I said, well, I used to be a Democrat, but actually now I'm an independent. And I didn't have time to talk to him, actually. I sort of brushed him away with his friend, you know, with wild blonde hair. And I sent him away, really. I said, good luck. But if I had time, I would have said, well, why do you want to go into politics? What do you want to accomplish? What is your position? Do you like Trump? What do you think about this? I would have asked a million questions, but unfortunately, I didn't have time. But I know underlying whatever he said to me is the fact that I want position, I want power, I want authority. And that if he was honest, if he was true, instead of giving me all the pablum that he was going to give me, if I can imagine what he might say, he'd say, you know, taxes, I want to reduce your taxes and da 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 da. But really, he's saying, why did I get into politics? I want position, I want power, I want authority. And I think those people are corrupt. And I don't think those people should be in politics. But those are the very people that inhabit the profession. So that's my thinking on it.
All right, but let me ask you now about the so-called independent movements.
Have
they destroyed any hope for you that there may be a silver lining here?
Well, you know, I think Europe is more civilized in that way. I think that the American system is very it's very prohibitive in too many, you know, doors to open and too many doors closed and who gets a potential to be in office, etc. And too few parties. I think in Europe, in the European community, there are many, many parties, and people are sophisticated. They know, they're not afraid to use the term fascism. They know what it is. They know, I don't want to say what I think they know, but I'm my daughter married a person from Europe, and I'm familiar a little bit with that. And they have a much more broad, sophisticated, it's fragmented, but they put the fragments together and they make, you know, parties out of them. And things go perhaps a little more orderly. Now, of course, they're having a lot of difficulties with the immigration problems. And there are many problems. But you have to be able to tackle these things not with influence and power and position authority, but you have to say that, look, all these people, you have to have a holistic, in my view, we talked about a holistic view, Utrice, and I think you know about it more so. And I don't think we have that holistic. I think that's a conversation that we should probably have. And you would be very good at that. To say, you know, what would a holistic view be? Not a fragmented, but what would a holistic view be? And maybe political system can't be holistic. We have to be able to think differently. And because we're so conditioned, and that's another thing that we have to talk about, consciousness itself and conditioning. We can't think outside of the box because we are the box. So holistically, you have to say, look, we're all human beings. We have a common ground. We all think. We all have this consciousness. And where did this consciousness come from? my upbringing. I'm an individual because where I was born, who my parents were, what I was taught from the moment I was on my mother's breast, every moment from that point on, I learned something, and that learning became my conditioning. And that made me the individual. But the human being is not the individual, because the individual is fragmented, conditioned. The human being is holistic. Everywhere, the human being. So we have to say we're all human beings. Everybody needs physical security. How do we go about that? It's very simple. But if you want psychological security, which doesn't exist, that becomes an impediment to getting the security that everybody needs.
But we are talking in what you've just said is understanding politics at a much higher level than it is practiced now and that it historically has been practiced.
Correct.
This is a dog-eat-dog, limited vision environment. People who are just absolutely obsessed about the thing you just mentioned, money and power and authority over others and all these other things. But still, it comes down to what decisions do you make or I make individually based on how, even with the way we have been conditioned, do we break out of the box? We have an opportunity now to consider doing that. Or do we stick with whatever it is they give us? And, you know, 6 months in, we can't say that we have Donald Trump and his system and the Republicans down to a science, because one thing they've shown us is their malleability. They can shape and, you know, they're shapeshifters. But what happens to us? We're still left with us. And we still have to figure out how we're going to get through the next couple of years, especially since we have some very important elections coming up. And
yeah,
all these traits are going to be called upon, and we will not progress at all, no matter where on the spectrum we are. We probably will not progress because the demand will be to fit dutifully into a, you know, a prescribed space so as to get the winning vote over here or the winning vote over there. There's no care about, you know, a deep examination of what politics ought to be and how we position ourselves within the circles of power, whether we create it or we allow ourselves to be smashed by it. But we should at some point, 6 months in, we should at some point soon begin to ask some questions about where are we going with these political parties that we are affiliated with? Where are we going? Where are they taking us?
Well,
what is their vision? And we should demand some answers to that and then reevaluate whether we stick around. Thanks so much for calling today, Michael. Really appreciate
it. You're welcome. Thank you.
So thank you. Mahat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, Hotep to the beloved family.
Thank you.
I'll tell you, this is an excellent program, and your previous callers have just given me so much food for thought, as it were, that I'm almost speechless over here. But I want to say that at first, when this Trump, this basically gangster, was elected through the Electoral College, which is important as a vestige of slavery, and there's a way around that we need to look at. I think 5 or 6 states have already done resolutions that the popular vote would prevail, and I think 11 is required, so that's something that could be pursued. But, Eutrice, as I was getting through, I missed the name and identification of the first caller, because I'm in New York, who's running for city council.
Her name is Gwen, and
Gwen.
She is in East Harlem. running from East Harlem.
Yeah, I wish there were some way that we could have some chat or roundtable so that there could be more connection, you know, so that our efforts were more working in a circle of unity. And I think that's one of the main keys. And we also need to come up with our own model of self-government and self-democracy. I believe Percival, I can't think of his last name, who did Thinking and Destiny, has an actual book on self-democracy. So we need to sort of let what's happening now kind of wash, you know, be like ducks and sort of let it wash off our backs, because it's exactly where we might have expected it to be in this system. And what Gwen was describing is so true, and it has a lot to do with how the world really works in terms of, can I say, global elite, a.k.a. Illuminati. And I think some of it has gotten so bad that we're looking at self-implosion. So I just recently got the recent copy, September 2017, of the New Republic. And it has the Orange Man as a bee in a wedding, in a whole wedding outfit. And it said, married to the mob. And it has a Russian oligarch there, you know, and it says, what Trump owes the Russian mafia. So that's a story that's just coming out, and it's like, Eutrice, you couldn't make any of this up, okay? I mean, I've been actually following, because I know some of us say, oh, Russia, whatever, but Russia is a thugocracy. Russia has, Putin has a murder factory there. So in the last 3 years, 60 people have, including 10-plus journalists and other critics, have had been murdered or have had suspicious deaths. So I don't understand when people just want to, you know, it's all this smoke. You know, it's just the smoke is just billowing beyond the roof, and then people are still saying, oh, there's no fire here. So I think that we can look at some implosion in place, and in certain respects, everything is where exactly it's supposed to be right now.
So let me ask you, in this, he's just about to cross the half-year point, Trump. What does this do for you in terms of examining your own politics and examining what has happened and what is likely to happen? Where does that put you? Have you thought about it yet?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I say we need to invigorate the circle of unity. Atla Marcus Garvey and Alambe Brad followed up, but he said when the conditions have been such that that's the point that the people wake up, as it were, and come together, because that's, see, it's all about the divide and conquer. And it's in its max phase right now, but we just have to understand that it's always, I mean, that's how they do all the wars, you know. So and a model of self-determination and self-government. I mean, it really has to rest on black people, you know, and those who can be in unity with the black struggle, because, you know, we're the last bone rising.
Well, thank you. We'll see what people think about what you've offered here today. But the idea is, you know, we should not let a moment go by giving some thought to our political condition as a whole. And how is it that they seem to be pulling this off, you know, pretty successfully, even though we know it's fraught with all kinds of contradictions and really horrible people doing the wrong things and all of that. But just the same, in a short while, we have learned how to behave as expected. And this is very interesting. Thanks, Matt, for your call. We go to Brooklyn next. David, you're on the air.
Yes, I've been paying close attention. And what I'm coming away with is that it is absolutely imperative that people get to the point of doing their system analysis and reaching that conclusion is clear to me that democracy and capitalism as exists in the USA cannot in any way benefit the masses of people who live here. People have to get to the point where they understand we have a one-party system, and with the two-division Republican and Democrat, and that's the way it is, and it exists for the exclusive benefit of those oligarchs who control that one party, and that's the way it is, and there's never going to be any fundamental change by sticking with the same thing over and over again. Because the masses of this country, the oligarchs who run it, and if you don't understand that, you need to do a lot more studying, have worked out a system when they know how to play the people, if necessary, to keep things under control and prevent rebellion to a large extent. And it's been working for them, and now it's even working better and better and better. They make advances slowly, just like the turtle moves slow, but he goes ahead. So the conditions of the people, as long as you're going to put your hope that you're going to get somewhere, what these two parties do, and they make it seem like everyone has a chance to get in the game, but they have worked out a system that works for them to keep all the power in these parties, and this is working well. So the point is this. The goal of the oligarchs is to rich themselves in this country as well as the world. And we have to understand that. And we have to understand to enrich themselves, they have to impoverish the rest of the people. And they're working very well at it. So all this stuff about wrestling around with these little Democrats and little Republicans and whatnot and running down to vote for them is ridiculous to me. We have to stand to the point where we understand it's necessary to do something different, and people don't get it. You know, you can talk all about the local officials at every level, and those people are kept in check by the oligarchs to run a system that enjoys enriching those at the top at the expense of the rest of the people. That's the way I look at it.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you at all on these points, but I do want to raise something in the light of, it's 6 months. What have you seen in 6 months that proves your point?
Well, yes, that's a good question, because I see that the ruling class that runs the parties and its representative, Mr. Trump, who is put into the president position, has gone back on every social benefit that he could get away with so far. Not only with regulations, but he's proposed all kind of social benefits to be diminished. These benefits were given at one time, and the game plan is this is the time to take some of them back. And it's been very clear to me and lots of other people that this is part of the playing the working class against each other. And divide and conquer has been said. So the point is, the social benefits, any kind of social benefit has been reduced. At the same time, he's enriching the ruling class by expanding things that will benefit them, like charter schools, like increase in quote-unquote defense spending, which is a welfare program for the rich corporations to make more arms that people don't need so they can make 1,000 more fighter planes to go around the earth killing people. The point is that the goal is to enrich those at the top and impoverish those at the bottom, and Trump is doing very well at that, and some of the people who are most vulnerable and have been victimized by these policies were the ones that supported him. So these people are brilliant in their terrible deeds, and they're working very well at it. So it's poverty for the masses and wealth for the people at the top, and they're working well at it. And as long as you stay in the Democrat Party or that other bad party, the Republican Party, I mean, it's silly. You're doing everything against your own interests. So you need to do something different. That's what I see. And if this continues, people will be suffering more and more.
What would that something different look like?
Well, it would look like a number of things. One thing would be a rebellion, and those people are willing to put their lives on the line would get involved in that. Another thing it would look like is a point where people stop registering for the Republican and Democrat Party, and that's another thing that could be done. But the point is that if you keep doing the same thing, it's not going to benefit you. You got to do something else. And part of the rebellion is to go against these two parties and get rid of these people that are involved in serve as vassals for the ruling class. Those people in the parties, those officials and people that have voted in, they are nothing more than vassals in the service of the ruling class that runs the country. And we have to understand that. And that's the way capitalism works in this country. It has different forms in other countries, in European countries, for example, but it works very effectively to enrich those at the top here, and it's working better and better every year, and the people are suffering more and more. And this is capitalism doesn't care anything about color. It just cares about money, and they will do the same things to those quote-unquote people called white as they do to the people of color. And a lot of those quote-unquote white people are finding that out now. And they better wake up and find out what the real deal is and do something different than what they have been doing.
In the doing something different department, would that include Bernie Sanders and the Green Party and others who felt that that is exactly what they were doing in the past election?
Right. Well, as I see it, Bernie Sanders is not the answer to this. He highlighted some things, but he's still down with the ruling class. His foreign policy positions don't make any sense. He said some very foolish things, like he called Colonel Gaddafi a thug and all kinds of incredibly stupid things. So he's still down with the Democratic Party. So he might lead some of them into his corral as a sheepdog or a Judas goat. He might do that, and some people will fall for that. But we got to do something completely different. And some of these other parties, they have spoken out well about some things that happen to do with economics and so forth. But they don't attack like they should things like part of the white supremacy racism that is infects the whole country. You see, you got to talk about social things as well as racism and economic issues. You got to cover it all, and that's really a start. But I don't see that as solving the problem. The problem is that under this system of capitalism, it is not in the interest of the people. And in other words, we need to have another economic system because capitalism is a failed system. It's failed because capitalism provides the means for the rich and the powerful and the oligarchs to profit at the expense of the labor and the resources of the people. So we need a new system. People have been trained to say, well, you got to have capitalism or communism is bad. You know, that's the choice, communism or capitalism. We'll take capitalism, even though capitalism is giving you a good shafting with a knife. But the point is, let's think about other things. Maybe another type of economic system that involves cooperative production. In other words, let's turn these factories over to the workers. Let's have the workers in a democratic way control the production. They won't be throwing away their jobs and taking them to Bangladesh and China. So we need something other than capitalism that enriches the capitalists and their managers at the expense of the workers. We need another type of economic system that people never even hear about. You don't learn anything about in school. They don't talk about those things. When you go to school, no matter what level you go to, you learn to support the system and go along with the current system, which is capitalism and imperialism throughout the world. You learn that. That's what is given to you. Just like the milk of your mother's breast. So never even hear about cooperative type of businesses. We need to do everything to do that we can do to keep our people working and be able to do things other than have a pure capitalist system where you have employers who do everything they can to make a profit, and the devil with the workers. The workers need to control most of the businesses. That's the way I see it. And
well,
all
we've had quite a lesson today. We've gotten quite a treat today listening to the opinions of the callers today. I want to thank you so much for that, because this is how we learn. And this is, I think, the primary purpose of PRN and of Lead Stories, to begin to gather new thoughts and new information that helps us see a situation from a different perspective. But it is clear we need a different perspective. Where the country is and where it will be heading are daunting enough. And we need to encourage and invigorate a whole different dialogue, a whole different discussion, because we will be the ones suffering inordinately from the awful decisions and the awful people making those awful decisions. So we better get excited about the idea of thinking differently, So thanks so much. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me via email at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. And I thank you for bringing your very best every time to open our eyes as we open our ears. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.